You know, I know you've worked with Elf Power before, but what was the genesis of the of doing a recording?
Well, I guess it kind of came about because we got asked to do a kind of ill-fated TV show for Turner South Network. Together, we were like it was a kind of a live taping for TV, and so we were gonna. So, you know, they backed me up for this TV show, and they did a set of their own, right?
Mm-hmm. And this was
me. And it seemed so successful that we were so awesome that we just said, hey, let's do some recording together. And so we did.
So this was Music Road, and was that in 2006?
Yeah.
And how did you prepare for the recording? How did you go through? I know you've got an extensive catalog of songs that you haven't recorded. How did you approach the task of what songs you wanted to bring to the band and why those songs?
Yeah. Well, mostly, you know, I thought about the things that I love about Elf Power's music, and I was wanting to exploit their many talents. So I was thinking about songs that, or initially I was just thinking about songs that I thought that would definitely exploit their many talents. You know, their you know, their kind of pop sensibilities and their kind of their psychedelic pop nature that is also part of, you know, kind of in my rock and roll DNA too. So I wanted that exploit that, and then it kind of once we started exploring a couple of those songs, you know, I started stretching out and thinking about, you know, just trying to explore some other fields that kind of soul feels on a couple of the songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what songs did you choose initially? Which were the first ones that jumped to mind?
Well, when we first, some of the songs that we did for the TV show, that Music Road thing, I think maybe Phil the Fiddler was a song that I'd had laying around for about a month or so. And I thought it'd be a perfect song for us to do together. Also, I knew I wanted to do Bilocating Dog with those guys, which was an old song I'd had lying around for a couple of years. And there were a couple of other songs that we had done together before, for that Music Road thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we recorded it, but it just didn't come out as good as some of these other songs. So so those are the kind of initial ones that I was had in mind and that we tried out first.
What were the songs that came along later, those more soul inflected songs?
Well, that song, Mad Passion of the Stoic, was a kind of song that I wrote during the time span of our recording, which was a few months. You know, we started and we'd record like one song a night or two songs, and then we would get together maybe a week later and we'd do it again, and then that stretched over a few months, you know. And so during those few months, I wrote this song, Mad Passion of the Stoic. In fact, it's the last song we recorded. And I just thought, you know, we were so familiar with each other as a band by then, you know. I just had the sneaking suspicion that this kind of groove, the kind of riff and groove and kind of super stripped down thing we could do also, you know what I mean? And so I could see their many aspects by then. And yeah, it turned out that's one of my favorite songs.
Did you, you've obviously worked with a lot of other bands. Your collaboration seems to be sort of your MO in a lot of ways. What was different with the Elf Power collaboration than with some of the other ones that you've done?
Well, one big difference is that we were working at my house, and we had the luxury of, you know, stretching it out for a while. You know, we took a lot of, we took a whole year, basically, of recording it. You know, I mean, we recorded in a couple of months, and then we let it sit for a while because we're both busy, and then we came back and we mixed it for a while, on and off for, you know, a month or so, and then we mastered it, and, you know, so we had the luxury of time, and so, and through that luxury of time, it came the luxury of familiarity, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we got to know each other a lot better. Then sometimes some of these collaborations that I've done, well, Lamb Chop was kind of the same way. You know, we stretched it out over a long time, and we were good buddies anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the other collaborations I've done, like the when I initially got together with Whitesford Panic, I didn't know those guys at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of jumped in it and did it in a couple of days.
Were there any songs on this that surprised you, how they came out? And
well, this one song called Teddy Bear was strange. I wrote a song one night. The next day, we got together to record, and I said, I've got this song. I just wrote it last night. Let's try it out. And we started playing it. And it was kind of cool. It was strangely hard to arrange. In fact, by the end of it, we were wanting to kill ourselves because of how simple the song was, and yet we just couldn't get it going, you know. And then, but the next day I was listening to it, you know, and wow, it was incredible. You know, it was just so great. And but I listened. The lyrics were just stupid. Just I don't know what I was thinking. It was just stupid. And so I scrapped all those lyrics. I put this new. I put and some new lyrics on it. And now it's all of our favorite song. We can't believe it. You know, it's got this kind of groovy kind of yeah. It's kind of weird. I mean, I hate to say reggae feel, but it's not really reggae, but it's kind of reminds us all of reggae music, and it just kind of happened, and we were all kind of thrilled with that collaboration.
You've mentioned in interviews before that you're not sure, you know, shortly after you write a song whether it's great or whether it's crap, and or alternatively you think it's great and then you come back to it and decide that it's shit. What's the normal period, gestation period, where you need to sort of be able to evaluate something with some objectivity or be able to hear it with new ears?
Never.
So when do you ever feel confident in your assessment of a song?
Yeah, well, I mean, I do. I like in all of my life, you know, it's an oscillating thing between, you know, confidence and you know, the opposite of that. You know what I mean?
Self doubt.
Well, you know, whatever the opposite of confidence is, I mean, it's like, you know, I just think it's horrible and I hate everything I do and stuff like that. So that is the way it is with songs. Sometimes when I'm writing it, I think this is the greatest thing I've ever done. And then, you know, really, when you play it in front of somebody for the first time, for some reason, you can you can tell there, even just with somebody else in the room, it kind of it can kind of puncture that bubble of confidence, and you can see it for some reason. You can find you can see it somewhat through their eyes or something, and then you can know if it sucks or not. Sometimes right away. Sometimes not even then. Sometimes they hate it, and you still have. You still think. I mean, I still think, God, this is a great song, and this guy's an idiot. And then, sure enough, over time, people come around to my way of thinking, and it turns out to be a great song.
What did Elf Power bring to the process? I mean, aside from you know what they are as a band, what was their role in terms of vetting the songs or arranging, or what kind of feedback did they provide?
Yeah, well, you know, Derek, the bass player, engineered everything. I mean, he brought over a bunch of equipment, his mixing board, and we recorded into my, you know, my Pro Tools rig, and some of my mics and some of his. And so, you know, we, you know, and he's a really great engineer. And so, you know, he did that, basically, you know. Engine, you know, the sound of the record is all Derek's, you know, really.
Mm-hmm.
And my attic has a lot to do with it. Recorded in my attic. But, and as far as arranging, you know, really, it is a kind of improvisational process. The way we arranged all these songs. I mean, I didn't pretty much say, I don't think I did anything say, you know, okay, this is how we're going to do it. You play this, you play this, you play this, and you play this. I never did that. Basically, I might have said, here's the chords, this is kind of a, I'm going to play it kind of, I'd like to do it kind of slow like this, you know. And then we'd start playing, and sometimes I'll go, ooh, don't do that. You know, maybe try something like this. Or, the, you know, Josh the drummer, I'd say, don't play it like that. That's too sounds too military or something like that. I was like, why don't we try it kind of like this, you know, that kind of thing. And then sometimes somebody would say, hey, don't do the chorus twice. That's too much. And I'd go, oh, yeah, right. You're smart. Or they would say, hey, you got to do the chorus twice. And I'd be, oh, yeah, smart. So it's kind of like that. Sometimes somebody would say, let's not all start out together. And I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. You know, so it's all kind of, you know, it's all very democratic.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a, what are you working on now? Or do you have anything that you're recording or playing?
Well, I recorded last, I just got back a couple of days ago because I was out in San Francisco recording with Jonathan Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
He was producing an album of mine.
Do you have a target date for that?
No target date. But I recorded with he and Tommy Larkin, his drummer. And then 2 weeks before that, I went up to Montreal and recorded another record with the guys from Silver Mount Zion and Guy from Fugazi.
Mm-hmm.
The North Star Deserter album. That's probably going to come out in September, I hope.
Do you, how many...
And now I just started making another album of kind of a... it's hard to say these kind of Kraftwerk-inspired instrumentals. Because
uh-huh.
I'm a... Kraftwerk is the greatest music ever.
What in particular?
And inspired by that, I'm just kind of... In an homage, it doesn't really sound like Kraftwerk. It sounds kind of crappy work, should be called. But yeah, I'm doing that too.
The instrumentals. Why you're known as a songwriter, of course.
What's that?
You're known as a songwriter for your lyrics. Why tackle instrumentals?
Because I I just did a soundtrack for a movie a German movie called Mitte in der August. You know, it kind of inspired me to want to... And it was all instrumentals. I don't know, it inspired me to want to explore more of that.
Mm-hmm. When do you write instrumentals differently from how you write normal song? Is the approach different?
Well, there's no words, so... that's the thing that's different about instrumentals, is that it's not propelled in my... The rhythm of the melody is not propelled through the meter of the word, you know what I mean? The syllabic meter of the words, you know? And so I get to break it down into this more simple kind of more mathematical melodies, you know, more kind of mathematical instead of, you know, more and less conversational. And it's very... I get to explore all these theories of harmony and rhythmic melody and things like that, and minimalism, melodic minimalism. That is exciting for me. And I can also explore this melancholy moods, you know, melancholy moods, or the fine line between melancholy and childlike innocence and happiness. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to do that.
Is that in any way an effort to sort of maybe return to some of the purity of your earlier work?
Well, I mean, you know, the whole reason I moved away from the strummy guitar, just me and a guitar, in the first place is because my fingers quit working as good and I couldn't strum guitar as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I needed a band to help flesh out my songs because I just couldn't play them anymore by myself as good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or else I've slowly been relearning how to play. You know, I'm just starting to get there. I'm getting some solo songs. The record I just did with Jonathan is very much like my first album in many ways. You know, a lot of it's solo.
Mm-hmm.
These instrumentals that I'm working on now are very much kind of reminiscent of like the kind of instrumental that I had on my first album or second album, West of Rome. It's kind of a very kind of simplistic. I can't think of another word, but kind of rather mathematical, but sloppy math.
Is that something you've wanted to do, is try to return to maybe, whether it's the aesthetics or the simplicity of those early records, is that something you've wanted to do, just haven't been able to because of physical limitations?
Well, you know, I've just recently been discovering how beautiful the minimalism of what I do is. I'm just coming to realize that. I mean, my whole career has been a kind of a quest to play with great musicians, you know, because it's my spirit soars when I get to play with Van Dyke Parks and Bill Frisell, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It carries me, it propels me through years, you know, just that kind of collaboration with working with Don Heffington and like I did on Ghetto Bells and Van Dyke Parks and Bill Frisell, just, you know, jamming with them, you know, it's a thing that my spirit you know, it's been a quest of mine, you know, and playing with Elf Power 2, it's just like, it's a quest. It's like, it's so much fun and so much kind of, so much great stuff can happen when that, the complex, you know, weave of our collaboration is so great. I love that. But then I'm just discovering how beautiful the minimalism is.
I assume that doesn't circumvent your quest for playing with great musicians still?
No, but it's helping me inform my collaborations with them. That you can explore both in the same thing. And so we're learning with Elf Power that we can do this kind of super thing, you know, super, you know, solo thing that morphs into a collaboration in the same song. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's very exciting.
You quit drinking how many years ago now?
I don't know.
It's been a few, though?
Yeah.
Has your songwriting changed because of that or since then?
Well, yeah, because I did write a bunch of songs when I was drunk. There's no doubt about it. But you know, the songs haven't changed, just maybe sometimes the process of it has changed, you know. I'd have a notebook when I was out drunk and I would just think of something and I'd write it down. Sometimes I'd wake up from a blackout drunk and there'd be a whole page of words that I never, don't even remember writing. And there'd be a song there, and it'd be a brilliant song for me. And, you know, so that doesn't happen anymore. You know, but still, I have a notebook and I still write down my ideas and my lines I think of, and I do it all the time. Constantly, all day long. I can waste all day in a corner.
Hardly a waste, I would think. But does that mean that writing is more difficult now than it used to be?
No.
It's just that you have a better memory of it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I think sometimes I found, you know, get a bit strident when I'm drunk and I'm writing songs, you know. I still have that. I mean, I still have a kind of a, I don't know. I think my song, it's hard. If I look at a song I wrote when I was blackout drunk, say like, Lucinda Williams from West of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
That's a completely blackout. Now, if I look at a song that I wrote, you know, yesterday, they seem the same almost.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So there's no big difference there.
On your website, your bio style is unusual in the sense that it's, you know, a series of, you know, one to seven words, you know, about different events. Why did you choose to do it that way? Is that how you think of your life?
Well, sure. I mean, that's a life is a series of occurrences. And they can be indexed, really. That's definitely one way to look at a life.
Mm-hmm.
or to inventory a life. Sure. And I just, when it came time, you know, when I needed to write a bio, you know, I don't know, all this stuff, it's for me to have to think about my life. I don't know. It's for presentation for the public, you know, for people who want to know. like you, because you look, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's terrifying for me, and it makes me depressed.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, when I started just kind of listing it out, it gave me some joy, especially in this kind of, you know, the way I call it, kind of stacking. That's how I felt it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is like a stack of occurrences that make me led me to the precarious perch that I am today.
So are we to assume, say, like Allen Ginsberg calls Vic an idiot? Is that, therefore, can we read into that that's an important thing in your life?
Yeah, everything is, mm-hmm. you know, almost. All those, everything listed there is all important. I mean, mm-hmm. how can that, I had a half an hour, half an hour at least conversation with Allen Ginsberg, one-on-one. You know, this is one of the greatest things ever. You know, I mean, it's these are the kind of things that the only thing, you know, it does two things. One thing, it fuels my ego. I think, wow, I'm cool enough that I got to have a conversation with Allen Ginsberg because he had read about me in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow, that does my ego good. Another thing that it does, though, is also that it gives me insight into the world. Here's an iconic figure in my mythological figure, almost, in my creative life. I mean, here's a guy who I read his poems a great deal, and he's a kind of pop culture icon. I mean, he rubbed shoulders with Dylan and Kerouac and started it's a whole part of this kind of hipster world, you know, and I know a lot of the myths about this guy, you know. And so, getting to see, talk to him, and get at kind of an insight to his personality, helps me to kind of realize how unrealistic is our understanding, our pop culture understanding of individuals and scenes and everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize we're all just people, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
This kind of thing. So it helped me in two ways, meeting Allen Ginsberg. One, it fuels my ego, and another thing, it helps me understand that we're all just people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's an incredible thing. An incredible thing for me, you know. It helps make me wiser. Mm-hmm. Meeting Allen Ginsberg.
You list three comas. Were those related to damage from the accident?
I don't remember. No, I mean, I don't know. I can't remember how many comas I had, and I don't remember which ones I listed on there. I mean, I've had comas when I think all of those. I think one of them was when I, an early one, before my accident, when I drank myself into a coma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, that's an early one. And then maybe, I don't think I went in a coma during my accident.
I think I counted three, but I could have been wrong.
And then, I OD'd a couple times and mm-hmm. went into comas.
So they weren't related to the accident?
No, okay. I don't think so.
On the current tour with, or on the upcoming tour with Elf Power, are you doing separate sets or joint sets?
Separate set.
Mm-hmm. Are they backing you for your set?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're doing we're going to do the entire album in order.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're doing. And a couple of old songs too, for good measure.
does doing the album in sequence, does that get, I'm guessing you wouldn't do it if it was boring to you. What's the invigoration, or what's the appeal for you?
It's a good set.
Mm-hmm.
It feels good. You know, it kind of has an arc.